Hello, this is The Leg Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel Problem Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. You want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
And we're back.
And this is the Linux Show for August the 20th, 2002, bringing you another live, exciting edition of the weekly adventure that we call the Linux Show. Broadcasting to you, at least temporarily, live from Aurora, Illinois. Some news, though, not for much longer. We are in the process of shifting all of our servers around. We've been talking about this move, the shift of technology now for several months, and it's rapidly escalating, and well, I'd say, what do you think, Kevin, another month and a half, and there is going to be no more Aurora, is there?
Oh, who knows?
Well, I would say it doesn't look like it at this point, but we'll still be broadcasting to you every week. It's just that the equipment will be originating from somewhere else for a change. We've moved most of our equipment down into Chicago, theoretically to get us cheaper bandwidth, but we'll see if that actually works out to be the case. Boy, the unions down in Chicago sure can nickel and dime you to death. What should have been a really easy project has, in some ways, just having electrical outlets added, have become incredibly expensive. But you live and learn, I guess. So we are, as I said on the outside, bringing you another edition of the weekly adventure of the Linux Show. We've got most of the crew with us here tonight. We're still waiting for Arnie to hook up with us, and we'll let him jump in. As soon as we do, I will try periodically to ring his phone number at his office. He's probably in a car on the way home from his school, and so making a mad dash for his office. But in the meantime, we'll go ahead and jump right into the first segment of the show, and I suppose we might as well just go ahead and step right into the news, the updates about Linux World Expo. And let me go ahead and start off, and then I'll pass it off to Doc and Russ, because they're both already here. I'll let you guys get started, but I want to get an opinion from you before we get to before we actually get started. A number of people have been emailing me over the last several days telling me of their opinion of Linux World Expo. And a lot of people have been telling me that this expo, in particular, this expo, was like taking a step back to February of 1999 in terms of seeing the booths, listening to people's attitudes, and the perspective that their companies were taking. There's just a more realistic flavor to the conversations. So, Doc, what's your take? What was the general sentiment at the expo this week?
Well, it was entirely a business show. Several people told me that there's been a kind of a forking of the Linux of the Linux expos. So the Ottawa show has taken over sort of the hacker side of the Linux movement, basically from the Atlanta show, which used to sort of embody that, and that has given a lot of the vendors the opportunity to say, okay, at Linux World Expo, the major show, we're going to do nothing but business here. It's going to be about nothing but business. So it was a business show. It was basically a business show. I thought, I had very mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I thought it was dull as hell. I thought it was, I mean, there was nothing in the way of swag. There was no buzz around most things, although Russ introduced me to the Zorus booth, and what was that was about the most happening booth, I thought. I'd heard two different reports. One was that they brought 3,000 Zoruses and sold all 3,000, and a later report that I heard was that they brought 1,000 and sold 200, which sounds a lot more realistic to me. But in any case, they were doing a nice business in that, and you know, it was a bit of sort of interesting. And HP had some kind of cool stuff. All the keynotes were by, you know, heavies with the big companies, Scott McNeely with Sun, some guy I didn't know from IBM, basically issuing a cavalcade of impressive statistics of what they're doing with Linux, which is just enormous. It was basically Linux gets in the mainstream, but the old movement, such as it was not in great evidence there. I mean, Helix Code was in, I think it was Sun's booth, and, Mandrake was going to be there, and then they weren't, and, you know, Caldera wasn't there, VA was long gone. They were gone from the last one, too, I think, maybe the last two. All the biggest booths were IBM, HP, Sun, Intel, AMD. And that was half the floor right there. It had shrunk considerably in terms of real estate. You could do the show pretty quickly. And if you wanted to do it quickly, you could do it in half a day or less if you weren't going to stop and talk with anybody and just sort of scope things out. It was only in the North Hall. At its max, it was the North and the South Hall. But on the other hand, I found out I had dinner with Larry Augustin on the last evening. He was very happy with it. He thought it was a terrific show. He said it was the first time that he felt that the dot-com boom had finally worn off a bit, and it was very realistic. And he said it was the second most well-attended show after the first one in San Jose in 1999, which amazed me. He said that was actually the most well-attended show. It wasn't the biggest show in terms of floor space. It was the most well-attended show. And this one was the highest since then, I couldn't tell. It didn't look like there were that many people there, but maybe there were. And they're just, it was a quieter kind of crowd. I can remember when Linus gave his first talk, and there were 10,000 people or something in the damn room.
That was the March 99 show.
Yeah, it's just huge stuff. None of that was there. And, I mean, that's world domination at work. I mean, we've taken over IBM and all these big companies. You know, now what? What do you think, Russ? You were there.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment on the whole. It was a business show, period.
Russ, you got to talk much louder.
Okay. It was a business show, period, end of quote. According to today's press release, they actually did clear 20,000 people attending. And considering that the last time they hit that number, it was with bouncing balls and flying frisbees and, you know, swag coming out the wazoo. And this group was a group of people looking for business solutions just through and through. And I talked to a couple vendors on the floor who at the close of the second day were just exhausted because they just had a steady, steady flow of people on the floor for those 2 days. It seemed to me that the third day got awfully light, but I think the first 2 days there was a whole lot of business going on. And, Doc's right. You didn't have the huge number huge number of exhibitors, and the HP booth was kind of interesting because it was actually, from what I understand, HP and Compaq each were going to be platinum sponsors prior to their merger, and they could not divest themselves of the floor space. So for the first time, you had these two gigantic booths on either side of the aisle, both of which were HP. So you had one of the main aisleways running through the HP booth, which was this vast wasteland.
It was amazing. I thought standing there, I could be at Comdex in 1988 or or PC Expo in 1992. It was just weird.
It was very interesting from that regard, but it was definitely all business. You had the keynotes like Amazon standing up there saying how they saved oodles of cash going with Red Hat. You had, I think, some of the more interesting announcements included the fact that the Linux standards base announced the first three certified operating systems, which were Red Hat, Mandrake, and SUSE. And I think that's going to be, once again, that's going to be very important inside the coming days in the business world, because so many of the software vendors and hardware vendors want a finite number of things that they can test against. They don't want to have to test against all these various and sundry vendors. And so if they can go and test against the Linux standards base and know that it should work on anyone that is compliant at some point in time at least, that would be extreme goodness in the business world.
I'd also heard from several people that while the Linux standard base was agreed upon, it's going to be a long time before Red Hat's in full compliance with it, especially their high-end stuff, whatever that is.
Yeah, for all their products, I guess. But they did certify at least one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know which one offhand. The interesting thing to me was that Caldera was missing from that list, although they were present at the announcement.
Well, that's because Caldera has a big shindig going on next week.
I know. They invited me to it, and I can't make it. I need to call some people.
I'm going, Doc.
You're going?
Yeah.
Good man. Well, say hi to everybody for me. I'd love to go. It's in Las Vegas, one of my favorite towns.
I'd take notes.
Yeah.
I'll take good notes for you. Speak in my recorder. But, now, what did you think of the Antec water-cooled computer?
I missed that one.
Yeah, I missed it too.
How did you?
I know several people talk about having a hearing now about the water-cooled computer. I never heard of it until
today.
The coolest
thing in the whole show.
And we missed it. I mean, somebody said a big thing. Said, water-cooled computer, or give away water, for God's sake. Steve, we swag for a reason. Maybe they did, and I just missed it. I don't know.
Yeah, that is really, that's right. They should have given away water.
It was a swag shortage of that thing.
Well, that was a big thing, actually. As you went around the floor, I saw an immense number of, like, 1U servers and other, blade-type servers and stuff like this. There wasn't anything that really physically stood out as being a different sort of product. So, I may have walked right past this thing and not noticed it.
By the way, we sold a record number by a factor of three times more subscriptions to Linux Journal in this show than we've ever sold anywhere ever before.
You're kidding me.
Nope.
So where does that mean Phil's moving to next?
I don't know. It wasn't that. It's like a few hundred is what it was. But still, it was that was indicative of something.
Yeah, well, I think it's indicative of a lot of things. And
I asked, was it mostly, because it looked like a business show to me. I asked people, was it more geeks or was it more your business types? They said it was all geeks. So I don't know. I think it was a business show, but the geeks were still there. It's just, there was nothing to get them excited.
Yeah. Well, they got excited about the water-cooled computer, I can tell you that.
God damn.
Because
I
got excited about
maybe
it.
Maybe Don, probably Don Marty saw it. I'm sure Don was on the case.
It was very cool. In fact, there's actually one here at the Global Computer Center here in Naperville, Illinois. And it's very, very cool. It's got neon lights are used as the power supply cabling for all of the fans. And, it's just very cool.
Now, isn't that kind of just like storing your cyanide in your spice rack?
So?
I just see bad things happening there.
I got a few pieces of geek news from the show. One is that, and this is extremely important for anyone who's a Linux Expo aficionado, the curse has been lifted. As many people are aware, the Golden Penguin Bowl is probably now the major geek event at the show. And Jeremy Allison, until this time, had never succeeded at being on the winning team. I don't know how many times he had lost, like about four times in a row or something like this. Well, he was finally on the winning team. So
that's so great.
Over, Mr. Allison has been officially listed.
You know, I was my one and only time I was on the bowl last year, and my side won, and I contributed substantially to that. I think because you know, the questions were sufficiently non-technical, or just weird, like, you know, name an operating system that's also a bad movie, you know, and I knew Plan 9, and I mean nobody else knew that bad movie, I guess. But I mean, a lot of people thought it was just really a wrong thing that I'd done that, because I'm not the least technical guy that may have ever been on that stage.
And you probably answered the winning question, right?
I don't know. But I participated in a number of winning questions. Yeah. But that was great. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, that was a legendary thing that he finally won.
But before we get off the subject specifically about the show itself and start talking about the trends the show may be really indicative of, including a lot of the news stories that have come out in the last 2 weeks surrounding the show. While we're on the subject of shows, Doc, I know you're heading off to a major geek expo this coming week.
Yes, GnomeDex, G-N-O-M-E, like the desktop. It actually has nothing to do with the desktop. It's the partial nickname of Chris Perillo, who's on Tech TV and many, many other places, and who is a native of Des Moines, or the native of Iowa anyway. I don't know where he's from. I guess he's from around here somewhere. And he's in San Francisco now. But anyway, Chris is putting on this thing called GnomeDex. His sort of nickname is Locker Gnome, I guess because he's small enough to fit in a locker.
Yeah,
It goes back to high school.
Yeah,
and he's leveraged that thing. Anyway, I didn't go last year, but I'm going this year, and I'm leaving, Thursday morning very early. I'll be there midday Thursday.
It has been, in some years, a very good event.
Really?
It is a Windows-centric event, but if you're a hardcore internet person, there has been historically some very cool things about GnomeDex, And
Chris has been very supportive of Linux. He's got a newsletter on Linux. He's worked to get Linux covered in as many ways as possible on Tech TV. So he's been, you know, he may have been coming from Windows, but he's certainly broadened out.
Oh, sure has.
Yeah.
But I don't want the audience to be afraid of going to his expo at all, because there's great content. In particular, I think Chris is one of the worldwide mavens of opt-in list stuff. He's running one of the largest email lists in the world right now at the Locker Gnome website. So he has, over the years, attracted some pretty heavy internet folk to his little event in all places, Iowa. So... If anybody is in the Midwest and looking for something very unusual to do this coming weekend, go say hi to Doc at GnomeDex. You can get information, I'm sure, at lockergnome.com, which is Chris Perillo's website.
You probably just look up GnomeDex, too.
Probably. But I'll try and get a URL for you before the end of the show and drop it on the IRC. But... So you're heading off there, and next week's show, I will be broadcasting live from the a little room that they're setting up for me on the floor at the casino.
Oh my God.
With three telephones, and I'm supposed to be interviewing the new CEO of Caldera next week on the show. So we'll see if he actually shows up. But that should be interesting. So let's get on to, though, I mean, what's interesting about this year, where you're coming out of a show that is a business show, More focused than in years past, you know, less pie in the sky stuff going on. More focused, flavor IBM, all of this, and to add on top of that, let's look at the stories that have come out the last couple weeks and have filled me, at least me, with a lot of excitement. I mean, if you're looking for, you know, this trend that the show may be indicative of, well, let's start with what I consider as one of the hot stories of the last couple weeks, which is a tiny little story, but it's in Time Magazine, The Little Penguin That Could. If you haven't seen this article, it is listed on Time Magazine's website, time.com. It's called The Little Penguin That Could, written by Chris Taylor. And, oh, it's only about, I'd say, five paragraphs long. It's a little tiny article. But it's got a very positive spin on it, on the attitude that Linux is finally ready for the desktop, and that there's products out there that's really good. And in particular, they rave, the author raves about the Lycoris desktop, which we talked about on the show 2 weeks ago. Hmm. And I don't know, article after article after article is got some real positive news for what's going on in the Linux community. Let me pull up one from one of the financial news. CNN Money. Okay, this is an article actually from August the 13th, CNN Money. Why You Should Keep an Eye on Linux, by Eric Helwig. Again, at CNN Money. Just go money.cnn.com, and I'm sure you'll be able to find it. But Eric talks about how in the post.com era that we're in right now, when all of the big boys are bleeding at the gills, and really nobody's got any positive news to really report, all of a sudden it's starting to look like there's real serious growth in the Linux community again. And some excitement from a tech investor author about the Linux community. And So I gotta be thinking that we're getting a real as an industry group, we're getting a real positive attitude change seems to be going on here during the last couple of months. And why is this? Why is this? Do you have any idea, Doc?
I think it's there's several things. One was I was actually surprised at the show that there was a fair amount of buzz about, just at the point where I thought that everybody had sort of semi-officially given up on Linux on the desktop, especially when you've got HP and Sun and IBM here, and they're not putting, you know, HP and especially HP and IBM have these massive booths. There's not a Linux laptop or Linux desktop that's sold as a production item there. I mean, it's just not, there's not in their catalog. And that says something. I mean, you're the biggest advocates in the world. They're just not doing it. So what does that say? Well, along comes Sun, and, you know, the only news item to come out of Scott McNeely's sort of downbeat but still witty keynote was that they're, on the 18th of next month, they're going to have a big announcement at their show in San Jose, I guess it is, or maybe it's San Francisco. I guess it is San Francisco. About their new Linux desktop. That's what they're going to do, and they think it's going to sell a bunch. Who knows? I mean, I heard the expression a blade client as this thing. But I was talking to Nat Friedman of Zimian about it, and he said that a lot of the complaints about why there's not, for example, a Linux laptop yet are being dealt with. The absence of device drivers and stuff like that are one by one they're falling away, and there is a growing confidence that somebody's going to take the pieces and put the whole thing together one of these days. And I think part of it has to do with a perceived weakness on the Windows side, that it's sort of, you know, it's maxed out, it's a tree that's not growing to the sky. At some point the thing you know, starts to collapse. They've not done anything really interesting here, and they're basically waiting for Longhorn. I mean, that's one of the big deals that's going on at Microsoft right now. They're sort of treading water until Longhorn comes along, and which is supposed to be their new, completely radical, changes everything operating system.
I thought that was what XP was supposed to be.
No, not really. XP was a big deal, but Longhorn's a bigger deal. And whatever, but the story is that XP did not take off the way they wanted it to. I mean, it's selling where the sale is coerced, but it's not selling over the counter the way they'd hoped. And it's because it gets full of spyware, and it really isn't that much of a real improvement. And so, you know, but in any case, there's this perception that Microsoft is not especially strong in this area right now, except in its incumbencies. And so there may be, for somebody who's really enterprising here, there's a chance to pounce.
And I think the other part of that, too, is that, we normally don't like to harp on price. But I'll tell you, right now, you have a very price-sensitive market out there. You got all these, especially the large tech companies and other companies, that they want to get things done, but they don't want to be spending gobs and gobs of money. And probably the biggest single innovation that seems to be coming out of Redmond right now is increased prices.
Exactly. I mean, it pissed off a lot of companies.
Yeah.
You know, it's a calculated thing on their part.
So I think that there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of interest because a lot of companies are finding that they can get a lot done for a lot smaller budget if they're using open source solutions at the moment. And so.
Well, and really, this comes back full circle to what I'm trying to get at in terms of this sort of feeling in the air, this overall trend that the new buzz that's been coming on the last several weeks. You've got a market, all of a sudden, a market-wide realization that Linux is cheaper.
Yeah.
Not only in business, but perhaps maybe even for consumers, where their interest is really only in surfing the internet and writing a few letters. So when we're looking at this total cost of ownership issue that we've talked about on many shows in the past, all of a sudden, this is getting a market-wide realization. And to the point that, I don't know if you've heard yet, Microsoft announced last week that they are going to spend a ton of money funding a research project to prove that Microsoft is actually cheaper on total cost of ownership than Linux.
Well, there's proof it's not right there.
Absolutely. If they're spending the money...
That's pudding right there.
If they're spending the money to prove it's not, we know it already is.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, one of the things I referred to in a column a couple of weeks ago is that out of one of those big Windows shows... a few weeks back, Ballmer was quoted as saying that they haven't figured out a way to come up with a cheaper solution, to be cheaper than the Linux solution. And that quote made the rounds inside a lot of the traditional media in one form or another. And, you know, it tends to validate what everyone has been feeling recently. That,
I think you're right. I think that comment may come back to haunt Microsoft and Steve Ballmer personally for many years to come. That was a really politically really stupid thing for him to say.
Oh, and just as an FYI, too, in my session on dealing with Linux FUD, I found out afterwards that there were at least a couple different Microsoft people inside the room at the time, which was interesting because I had identified the current source of FUD as being largely from Microsoft, based on the arguments that were showing up. They're all Microsoft arguments these days. They're not the traditional arguments that we fought for the last several years. But I found that interesting.
Yep.
Also, a couple other sidelights that came out of the show. There's a report that Bruce Perens it may be soon leaving HP. Apparently.
Well, after his humiliation at OSCON, I wouldn't blame him. He wanted to talk about you know, Geek Pack and some political stuff, we didn't get a chance to get together. So I don't really know. But I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, well, from what I heard, this has been brewing for a while, and frankly, it doesn't surprise me that he wants his hands untied. And there were a couple reports coming out of the show.
Talk louder, Russ.
Excuse me?
Talk louder.
Oh, sorry about that. Sorry, folks, I'm on an entirely different phone in an entirely different house tonight, so doing the best I can. Then there was the march on City Hall on Thursday. Mike Thiemann from Red Hat and a small group went down to stand for pro open source in California. And
This is a proposed law that the I think it's the San Diego blog came up with. It's one that would compel the state to only buy open source stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice idea.
As the libertarian in me did not want to go along with that.
Yeah, me neither.
It's too young an industry to have laws like that. You know, we're busy fighting laws with unintended consequences. Let's not make one of our own.
Right. And
Michael's a libertarian. I kind of was surprised by that.
Yeah. So. I mean, the whole idea, the whole notion that you use the word compel. We certainly do want to compel the government to buy only Windows-based products, right?
Yeah.
It's really ridiculous of us to use, as an industry group, to use arguments that the government must be compelled to buy only open source. That's sort of silly. I can't get my arms all the way around that one, although I think the general idea is a good idea. They need to fine-tune the language and what they're really trying to accomplish with the law. And I'm sure what everybody wants to see really is a level playing field.
Right.
So, it's an interesting one. What do you think of the IBM VA news? You said you had dinner with Larry.
Well, yeah, Larry is extremely excited about it.
No shit, he's got it.
He's very excited about it. I think it, you know, is a...
This is like survival.
It was a dream deal. It was a dream deal. And actually, LinuxCare, Avery Lyford was there. They had a really nice off-site thing at the W. Very, very, all business. They have a new product, the name of which I'm forgetting at the moment, Levanta.
Yeah, which is also an IBM-centric product.
Right. I mean, it's basically, you know, it's a multiple Linux instance on a mainframe management something or other. But what VA has is, you know, a great big SourceForge deal. And it's certainly breathed a lot of life into that company. And Larry's happy about that. And you know, it was cool. But again, you know, I think that these companies make a mistake not having a booth, you know. If you have news like that, for God's sakes, give people a way to see how it works, you know. I mean, of course, you know, I know there's a cost associated with it and the rest of it, but really, you know.
They could have afforded a 10x10, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I think with the attitude of a lot of the...
If we can afford it, they can afford it, okay.
I think the attitude is, without pointing fingers or naming names so people get in trouble, a lot of the people who work with some of the surviving Linux companies, because of the fact that they, a year ago, year and a half ago, had 40x40 booths, they're embarrassed if they can't show up with the same
right.
kind of presence. And so they would rather not show up at all than be embarrassed because they've taken a whack on the stock market. Well, guys, grow up. Show up to this expo, take a 10x10 booth, and do the best you can with a 10x10 booth. I've been involved with some trade shows where sometimes the 10x10 booths have been the winners of the expo.
Right.
If they present their company well, you can do a lot with a small booth, but... I was a little disappointed when I heard that Larry wasn't there as an exhibitor. That's too bad. But I really, it's an interesting deal when you think about it, that this deal between IBM and VA sort of convoluted. It's like, I know IBM has been already becoming, you know, a Linux company for the last, 18 months now, but, you know, a traditionally closed source company absolutely wrapping their arms around a company that's a historically open source company and converting them into a closed source company while at the same time absorbing that open source product that VA had developed and distributing it even broader. So it's a really interesting relationship that the two companies are moving towards. It's very unique, just to say the least. So, Doc, other than what we've been talking about, is there a specific story this week that has really excited you?
Well, this isn't so much an exciting thing. It's just an interesting observation. Also from the show, I had dinner with Ted Shelton of Borland. And Kylix has been making, he says it's one of their most successful products. It makes millions.
Yeah.
Millions. And
why did they, IBM bought them?
Well, they didn't buy Borland. You're talking about Borland here.
Yeah, I thought IBM put in a bid to buy Borland.
Well, maybe you know more than I do. That's not my understanding. I think they're still an independent company.
I had heard a rumor that last week at the expo, maybe it was a totally false rumor. Here I go spinning stories that IBM was in the midst of making an offer.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. But I mean, I'm not sure it makes complete sense. But you know, when do mergers ever do that?
They never do.
The interesting thing is that Kylix, you know, has always been an IDE for Delphi, and then with there was a Delphi. Delphi itself is an IDE. It's their own language. It's their own development environment. And what Kylix did was just expanded it over to Linux. Well, what they're doing is taking the Delphi IDE. They're taking Kylix and making it the cross-platform version of. They're moving that functionality back into Delphi, and primarily Kylix is now a cross-platform C++ development environment. And the idea there is to appeal to the far broader marketplace that is C++ developers. I mean, that's an entire huge universe, whereas Delphi is their own sort of relatively small universe, and they're expecting it to sell enormous amounts in that. For, you know, all those places like IBM where there are, you know, there is a need to port a lot of Windows stuff over to Linux. It's kind of like opening a dam. It's going to be pretty interesting. And I guess that alone would make it interesting to IBM as a company. But, they could just simply give them a lot of business and accomplish the same thing. I don't know. But that was an interesting thing. So Ted was all excited about that, and that was, I thought, a fairly interesting piece of news.
Okay. Well, Kevin, you have not been saying very much at all. Have you got any hot news for the week for us?
Oh, yeah, a couple bits of news. GCC 3.2 is finally official, so go ahead and grab that if you want. And there is a new Red Hat beta, which is basically the same as the last beta, but compiled with and including GCC 3.2. So looks like Red Hat 8.0 probably isn't too far down the road.
What is it compiled with?
GCC 3.2.
Okay. Anything else?
That's the big news as far as new software and stuff is going.
Okay. Russ, have you got a hot story of the week besides the expo?
The one that I happened to see today when I was cruising around. Apparently, Turbo Linux has sold its Linux business and its name. And I think I saw that either at Linux Weekly News or Linux Today, so someone else is going to have to look
at
it.
Yeah, that is big news. That just happened this afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, the rumor I heard is that Turbo is actually going out of business.
Well,
which
they some reports...
Maybe this is the same thing.
...going into just being a proprietary software house. I don't know. The other thing is, Jeff, you mentioned about Larry not being there as an exhibitor. Well, being mindful of the fact that Larry can't be there as an exhibitor because Larry is basically unemployed.
Well, he's chairman.
He's chairman.
He's chairman, yeah.
Yeah, but VA is still, VA is doing the business,
yeah,
and Larry is,
being
he's only their biggest stockholder, really.
He's still basically unemployed.
Mm.
I mean, chairman or not.
Yeah.
The other big thing, the sleeper story from the show, and one that didn't get much coverage, has to do with China. Because the Linux Around the World thing, they had a delegation from People's Republic of China talking about the amount of effort, the very significant amount of effort, that they're putting into a Chinese internationalized version of Linux. And I found out later from the Lin18 UX folks, the Linux Internationalization Project, that they are coordinating this very tightly with the PRC people, and that they are going to be following whatever standard comes out of that from the pre-standards group. So that's going to be, I think that's the big sleeper story. That's the one that's going to be real, real important in the next couple of years, but didn't seem to get a whole lot of coverage.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if they actually follow through with the GPL.
Well, they did apparently do a software release like a week ago.
Yeah.
Although I have not seen it.
It's going to be impossible to enforce the GPL with China.
Well, that's true, but then again, the question there is do they really have any incentive to go away from it? Part of the problem with enforcing anything in China has been, you know, do they have an incentive not to go along with the licensing? Well, with the GPL, it's probably to their advantage to open the code, because it will mean more people getting more work done sooner, which I would think to them would be goodness.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're probably right there. I think the incentive really is not to fork off in their own direction, because that would be just throwing money. But then again, they've got, what, 70 billion people over there, or, you know, something like that. I don't know. A lot of people. So they've got a lot of available manpower, and they may not care. I don't know. Well, I have one last hot story of the week before we take a break and jump into segment two. Segment two, obviously, it's 8:45. Segment two is going to be short, very short indeed. But my last hot story of the week is one that's been talked about for the last couple of days, and that is Will Wheaton has become a Linux advocate after much prodding and suggesting that he become involved with the Linux community, because he fancies himself to be a geek. He finally went out and bought one of those Micronix boxes from Sam's Club, and came installed with Linux, and he loved it and immediately upgraded it to Mandrake. And Will Wheaton is now a Linux junkie, and we've invited him to come on the show next week. He may not make it. It may take him 2 weeks. He's got to build up his courage. But I've asked him to join us on the show because I thought it would be interesting to catalog his journey. So we're gonna be posting notifications on that on the website during the course of the next few days as to whether or not we're gonna actually have him next week or the following week after. But it's gonna be fun. I think it's really cool now that you're actually seeing some high-profile people actually stepping forward and talking the game, supporting open-source computing. It's very exciting. Well, let's go ahead and take a short break. It's 8:45. It's August the 20th. This is The Linux Show. We're going to take a very short break, about 3 or 4 minutes, and be right back with segment two. Everybody hang in there. Kevin, put on a tune. And we'll be right back.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make the Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out SourceForge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms.
And this is the Linux Show for August the 20th, 2002. A lot of conversations going on in the chat room. Large group tonight. I want to thank you all for joining us for the show. We're going to jump into a shortened segment number two, but an important segment number two. But really, we're having a great conversation going on during the break. And Doc, real briefly, could you tell everybody about this Zarus radio application?
Yeah, if you all go to myzorus.com, I think it's, or maybe it's just zorus.com, but I think it's myzorus.com, myzorus.
It's probably my.zorus.com.
Not sure. Let me look. I was away from the browser, but give it a try. Let's see.
But anyways, tell us about the application.
Yeah, myzorus.com. There's a featured item there. It's a piece of shareware called the Z Radio. There it is. Yeah. Oh, maybe they moved it. Oh, they got rid of it. Darn, it's gone from there now. Featured software is now Reefware. It was Z Radio. Oh, well. Anyway, but it's called Z Radio. Look up Z Radio. I bet it's somewhere. And it's a $10 piece of shareware. And it runs on the Zorus. And if you've got a Wi-Fi card in the Zorus, or you're otherwise connected to the net, you've got a radio. And it's got the, you know, in other words, you plug in the headphones and plug the headphones either into a speaker system or into your head, and you have the only Wi-Fi radio in the world, as of now. And when I told Bill Goldsmith about it, he says, that does it, I have to get one. So,
yeah.
Meaning a Zorus.
Yeah, very exciting, very cool. And, speaking of Bill, great segue, Doc.
Yeah.
Segment number two.
Pardon me, you go ahead while I have to catch this call.
Okay, that's okay. Segment number two tonight, we're basically making an announcement, and that's why it's a shortened segment. But it's an important announcement because we want you people who are the people who are listeners, the people who join us in the IRC, to get this news first before we actually make the public press releases. A little bit of this information has leaked out to a couple of Linux user groups around the country, so there are some people who are aware of this, but you're getting pretty much an exclusive announcement, and that is the announcement of the creation of a new open source project, and the name of that project is radiofreeuniverse.org. We will be having a website going up very shortly. I'm just basically trying to decide which website to put it on. With the news of SourceForge moving over to IBM, I've actually sort of hesitated going ahead and setting up a site there, but we will probably go ahead and put it on SourceForge anyways. But the focus of this project is to take a lot of what we have learned over the course of the last several years running GeekPack and Linux, or excuse me, GeekCast and the Linux Show, and putting it together with some efforts that other people have done in internet broadcasting, and coming out with a set of tools that will more readily make it possible for people to do webcasting. Now, right at the moment, there's a lot of doom and gloom going on about webcasting in general. There's, you know, panic. Oh, the end of webcasting as we know it. And to a large degree, the regulations as they now stand are going to impact severely the way broadcasting is going to be done. However, the effort...
In the U.S.
However, the efforts of many savetheradio.org, ourselves, a lot of people have been making great efforts to make the facts behind regulatory moves such as CARP and just digital copywritten product in general. As the people in political positions become more aware of the subtleties of the laws that they helped to create, they have realized that they have made errors. And so it is inevitable that in time, and it may take a year, it may take 2 years, for some sense to come back into the total picture. I'm very confident right now at this point that CARP is going to be revised. There's a strong enough movement within Congress right now that I'm very confident that we're going to come out of it with some new, softer, friendlier regulations. Doesn't mean it's going to go away. But even though I'm confident in that, and an awful lot of other people are confident as well, that doesn't mean that's going to happen instantly. So we're taking the opportunity of this time to get together with other people who are like-minded with ourselves and to begin to develop this library of tools for webcasting to make it easier for all you people who are out there listening to us to make content of your own. So individuals, organizations, businesses, national governments, I don't care who it is, we're going to give you the tools so that you can legally abide by the letter of the law and produce content and keep all the powers that be are happy. Even if the softer regulations pass, there's still going to be some rather stringent requirements for cataloging the data. And what I mean by cataloging the data, that's keeping track of all the songs that you play on your content that you develop, because the record companies demand that that information be gathered as part of their – they need that information for two reasons. Number one, if they've got sufficient demographics behind that information, then they know that webcasting is doing the same thing for them that radio is, actually benefiting them. And so it will prove to the record companies on that sort of avenue. And on the opposite side, it really does give them more data to focus in on in terms of the roles that webcasting is playing in terms of being a narrowcasting media rather than a broadcasting media. I mean, if all of the Internet was another broadcasting media, we probably wouldn't need it anyway. So to have these tools could be very expensive, could be very time-consuming. So we've assembled this group of people together, or starting to assemble this group of people together, to develop these tools under the project heading of the Radio Free Universe. Bill from Radio Paradise is one of the leaders and significant contributors of software to the project. Bill didn't join us tonight, but hopefully we'll have him back sometime in the next couple of weeks to begin talking about it. But let me give you a brief idea of a couple of the goals of the project overall, and so that you understand that even though this is an open source software development project, there's actually roles that people who are non-technical people can play in this project. The first goal, of course, is to gather together all of the available resources that we could include into a total suite. And I tell you, a perfect example of that, Doc, is I was not aware of that Zoris product until you mentioned it a few minutes ago.
And by the way, I just found that if you go to Google and just put in Zoris and Z Radio, that will get you to the software index where it's shown. And
right,
there's a really cool visual of it as well there.
Yeah. But we need people to help us to catalog the software that's out there that is not only we need people helping us research not only all the all the streamer server technology. We're pretty well adept at that ourselves. But there's an awful lot of clientware that's out there that needs to be tested, needs to be compared, and needs to be cataloged into our database tools. So there's information gathering roles. We also want to collect and establish a library of open license music and make this library of open license music available to any individual or any broadcaster or anybody who wants a copy of it will be able to contact us, and for the cost of the CD and shipping and handling, we will provide huge archives, hopefully huge archives, of license-free music that people can then use as content on their chosen radio broadcast. So we could probably have, I would guess, a half a dozen participants around not only the United States but around the world finding out where all of the little garage bands who want to contribute music to the database, where they exist. And so there's a lot of roles like that that we have established. There are more along the lines of a what you would call a non-technical, clerical type role that anybody who's really interested in promoting the concept of unlicensed music and unlicensed broadcasts can really help us out with. In terms of the hardcore programming, there's going to be a lot of it. We're going to be integrating a number of pieces of server software and integrating them with some management and control tools that were developed by Radio Paradise and KPIG. Most of, I'd say, to put a quantitative number on it, most of the stuff that we're actually going to be doing is web development with PHP. So very, very little hardcore coding. We are going to be looking for a couple of people to join with us that do some C, and so that we can do some compiled code in a couple of database applications for keeping track of music files. But other than that, really the kind of person that we're looking for is somebody who is a fairly adept web developer with PHP skills. Or if you don't have PHP skills, this is a good opportunity for you to get involved with a project where you can learn PHP and help develop a very competent set of tools for doing webcasting. So that's what we're trying to accomplish, folks. Of course, everything that we're going to be putting into this will be GPL or some other similar open license. There are serverware out there that is not under the GPL. They have their own licensing scheme that is still open source or close to it that we may or may not add to the project. We haven't decided yet. But the goal is to put as much as possible, if possible, 100% into a form of a GPL product. So, goal is to have a beta release by the end of the year, and hopefully we'll have a couple of upstart broadcasters, start radio stations, come January of 2003 making use of our beta and helping us to refine the tool. So,
this, I might add that if it replicates what Bill's already doing with KPIG and Radio Paradise, and now basically just as Radio Paradise,
yep.
This is a grade of granularity in integration with the web, as well as record keeping and archiving, that would be the envy of the broadcast business. It's far more complete than anything that over-the-air broadcasters are doing now. So I think it's just an interesting thing. I think it's going to actually it stands to revolutionize over-the-air broadcasting as well. It's certainly at the hacking level, it certainly has that capability.
Well, at the hacking level, it's certainly going to be an interesting project, and I'm quite confident that you are likely to see most broadcasting companies picking up a copy of this rather quickly.
Yeah. Now, where do we find it again? I was off this.
Okay, the URL is going to be radiofreeuniverse.org.
Radio Free Universe, okay.
Yes. It is not there yet, but by this time next week, there will be a website called radiofreeuniverse.org. So, those of you who are interested in helping us out, take out your PHP books, start working, honing your skills. We will be posting information at that URL over the course of the next few days, next week, and moving forward with that. And hopefully we will see little tiny Linux shows replicated all around the world come a year from now. That would be very, very cool. My
micro broadcasting.
That's right. My goal of doing this as sort of an NPR entity has always been, wouldn't it be cool if we had like half a dozen people around the world doing this show in different languages? That would be really cool. I've always wanted that to be a long-term goal. So now we're going to work on the tools to let them do it. So, but that is it. That's the announcement. We will, again, be here next week. I will be not in Aurora. I will be in Las Vegas doing my segment from the MGM Grand live. But we will see everybody in the same time slot next week, bringing you another edition of the Linux Show. So everybody, thanks for coming out tonight. We will see you all next week. And one last reminder, if you are in the Midwest and you've got nothing planned, check out the GnomeDex event and give Chris Perillo a nudge. Say hi from the Linux Show for us. Well, that's it. It's after the 9 o'clock hour here in Aurora, Illinois, so we're going to sign off. Until next week, everybody, thanks for coming by. This has been the Linux Show. We're out of here.
Yes, you too can sponsor the Linux Show. Here's an example. Insert your company name here. Is a valued sponsor of the Linux Show. Here's another example. Insert your company name here. Is bringing you this special segment of the Linux Show. Now, thanks for checking us out and sponsor the Linux Show.